Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And we're ready to do just that with Patty and her guest.
Well, happy Friday, everybody. And I have an incredible guest with me today. I'm very excited to have Marilyn. And I may make a mistake on your name, so you can always correct me. But Marilyn Krichko?
Krichko.
Okay, absolutely. Awesome. Yep. So Marilyn and I actually met when I was working for Microsoft in Seattle in 2010. Well, actually, probably 2009, because I was working on the launch of Office 2010, and she was there doing a presentation, and I was really impressed with her background. So Marilyn's a consultant who is passionate about engaging leaders and teams to create collaborative work environments and increase business performance. So we have a lot in common. She has built her career on the practical application of best practices and believes that we have ability to add to our skill set to meet the standards and demands of today's workplace. And we're going to talk about what's going on in today's workplace. We're going to talk about leadership and teamwork. The other things we have in common is we both have a background in organizational development training and very involved with a lot of worldwide projects and strategies. But the one thing we also have in common is we are both rowers. And Marilyn is the author of a book called The Rower's Code, which I highly recommend you get on Amazon. There's The Rower's Code, and then there's The Rower's Practical Handbook. So we share a bit in common around that, and we can talk about some of that as well. So she has an undergraduate degree and an MBA from North Florida, and she also holds a certificate in Total Quality Management from University in Sweden. And when not at work, she enjoys rowing, cycling, and cross-country skiing. And I think you're joining us from Wisconsin today, right?
I am. It's about to snow tonight.
Wow. Wow. Well, we're the studio's in California, and we're in Orange County, California, and we're between the huge fires in Los Angeles and the huge fires in San Diego. We haven't been hit here yet, so it's pretty bad and pretty windy. So Marilyn, tell us about your background and how you got to where you are and why you're passionate about what you do.
Well, thank you. First of all, Patty, thank you for having me on your show today. I love live talk radio. I think it's really fun. And so for people like you who do it every day, I admire what you do, and I think it's amazing. And for the people who are joining us today, thank you for joining. So I got started when I was quite young. When I was little, I went to my guidance counselor. And, you know, I don't know if you've had that experience, but a lot of us meet with guidance counselors when we're young, and hopefully they give us good advice. Well, I grew up in a farm town in Pennsylvania, and my guidance counselor gave women two pieces of advice. You either got one or the other. The first one was that you would be a secretary, and the second one was that you would work at the mall. It wasn't really advice.
You weren't even given an opportunity to be a teacher or a nurse?
No, because we already had enough teachers and nurses in our town. So what we had left was, you know, the mall and a secretary, because secretaries were retiring. And I was furious. You know, I was born an optimist, so I was really lucky. I was born an optimist. Yep. I get a lot of pleasure out of success. I think it's fun to be successful. I prepare to be successful in my life. So I went to this meeting with my guidance counselor, and when she said, you'll work at the mall, I sat there thinking, I hate you. All my emotions welled up inside of me, and I thought, I can't believe what you just told me. This isn't going the way. You know, all the self-talk started to happen in my head.
Right.
And I went home, and a really key thing happened. I was so upset that night that my sister, who's 3 years older than I am, she felt sorry for me. So she said, why don't you come down to the tennis courts, you know, tonight, because my friend Frank Bober is going to be playing tennis. And I said, I don't want to do that, and I'm upset. And she said, please come with me. So first of all, my sister got me to stop what I was doing and to stop all the negative talk in my head. And she got me to switch gears and do something else. So that was a key thing that I've also learned. It's a big lesson learned in my life. The second thing that happened was that after I saw him play tennis, I decided that I wanted to get a tennis scholarship. Now, I was 14 years old, and I had never played tennis. But I decided that I wanted to get a tennis scholarship to a school in Florida. So that's the second key thing. I made a decision. Then the third most important thing happened. On the way home, I told my sister about my decision. So that was a really key thing. I was bold enough to say, Jane, I know what I want to do with my life. Because, of course, she asked me that on the way to the tennis court that night. She said, okay, if you don't want to work at the mall, you know, or you could change and try to be a secretary.
Thanks.
You don't want to do that. You know, yeah, really. So she said, by the way, she got secretary. She took a healthcare company public later in life and sold it for $53 million to Humana. Anyhow, so Jane said, what do you want to do? And I wasn't sure, so I decided that night. And actually, I decided I wanted to be a tennis player for a crazy reason. So if there are people who are listening today and people think you're crazy because you decide you want to be something, do not listen to them.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Listen to them at all. You know, I had never played. You know, nothing had ever happened, but I decided that, and it was my dream. So own your dream. Anyhow, on the way home, I told Jane my dream, and she turned and looked at me, and she said, well, then let's start by playing tomorrow.
Awesome.
And that was a key thing. Don't wait. If you have a dream, if you have something you want to do, do something. Don't keep it as a dream in the back of your pocket. So I've never been someone that kept things as dreams in the back of my pocket. I always go after them.
Yep.
And it's because I had that sister who believed in me and said, let's start.
Yeah.
Start by playing tomorrow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So anyhow, So that's what got me started in my career. I ended up getting a full scholarship, by the way. I did get my tennis scholarship. I got a full scholarship to the University of North Florida.
Right.
They also paid for my MBA. I went to work for the Federal Reserve Bank. Then I decided to enter the paper industry, and I got promoted until I was one of the people running the world's oldest shareholding company in Sweden. They were founded in 1288, which was baffling to me because I couldn't think back that far. Yeah. And so anyhow, I was successful there. Then my mother got Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh.
So stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, she got really sick. I was living in a foreign country. So I decided to quit my job and come home and start my own consulting practice.
Yeah.
And that's how we ended up meeting each other years later, Patty, because I was living in Seattle.
Right.
And I started doing some work at Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So I was born in Wheeling, West by God, Virginia. And actually, when you drive in and out of town, it says you have just entered and left Wheeling, West by God, Virginia. So we have that in common. We're both Virginia, or West Virginia, Pennsylvania. I played high school and college tennis. My dad started teaching me tennis when I was 7 years old. And you said some things that were very insightful in telling you a little bit of your story. You said that if you have a dream, you need to go after it, right? You need and don't wait. So go do something. Take a lesson. Read a book. Take a free webinar. Find somebody to be a mentor who's doing what you want to do so that you can learn from them and just simply say, you know, I really admire you and what you do. Could I buy you a cup of coffee? Because I want to learn from you. And those are critical skills right now. I mean, especially when you're looking at the future of work, what came out in our local paper today was the best places to work. And what's interesting is the thing, and then also in the paper came out, on the other side of the paper came out, you know, want a top workplace, avoid the pitfalls pointed out by employees. So what does the future of work look like to you?
Well, and even before we move to that, I wanted to say a quick thing about what you just said.
Yeah.
You know, and about inviting other people into our lives. So I think there are five things that successful people and teams do. There are things they have in common. So the first thing is they're passionate about what they want to accomplish, right? So you have that vision or that dream that you know, and you're passionate about it. So it's not a dream where it's like, oh, yeah, I want to be, you know, the president of a company someday, or hey, I want to, it's not like that. It's like, I want to go after this thing.
Yep.
So you have passion. You feel it in your heart, in your emotions.
Right.
It's a piece of you. You know, it's part of you. And one way that you know you're passionate about it is because you don't stop thinking about it. See, you know, it's in there. The second thing is that you know your window of opportunity when you see it. That's a really key thing. There's opportunity around us all the time, just like you said, and it might be just having a cup of coffee with someone in a conversation.
Right.
Or it might be where someone says they have a need for something. But as soon as you hear that need, you think, I can do that. You know, that's it. So you know that window of opportunity when you see it. And I have to tell you, You know, there are times when I find myself, and tell me if this has ever happened to you, you're walking somewhere and you're looking down and you're not looking up. You know, so you've got your head on the ground, you're right. out walking outside, and you never see all the beautiful things around you. Well, these things happen in our heads, too, with our dreams.
Yep.
Sometimes we push them down and we bury them, so we're just kind of looking down at them like they're at our feet. Lift your eyes. You know, it's kind of like when you buy a new car, you start seeing that car everywhere.
I know.
If you start talking about it, saying, can we have coffee or whatever, you'll find that there's opportunity all around you. So that's the second thing. You know your window of opportunity when you see it. And if you're not seeing your window of opportunity, lift your eyes.
Yep, great.
And the third one is you understand the importance of teamwork. So you need these other people. We need other people to live our dreams. Just like I needed to see Frank Glover playing tennis. I needed to talk to my sister about it. You know, we went to the tennis courts the next day. Guess what? We were terrible. You know, I was better than my sister, but she was really terrible. So she said something to me that was key. She said, you know, you should find someone else to play with. So already I had to start thinking about what's the network I need to build, right? The next thing is lead with a plan and not your emotions. You'll fail. I fail every day. You know, I try to do as much as I can, but I make little mistakes. If I got emotional about those mistakes, it would ruin everything because I would stop right there.
Yep.
So leading with a plan gets you not to stop at your emotions or your feelings.
Okay.
It gets you to realize there are other pieces to you. And then the last one is you maintain a sense of urgency around what is mission critical, what I call mission critical. So mission critical for me is what are the next three steps that I have to take to keep things moving forward?
Yeah.
So you don't bury it. Don't bury your dream. Okay. Yeah,
that,
sorry.
No, that was that. Those were great. I really, and those were absolutely perfect. And it, you know, you're passionate about something when you find yourself doing it when nobody's watching.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or you find yourself mm-hmm. gravitating towards those kinds of things. That's when you know
yep.
something is your, because in my book, I talk about figuring out what your strengths are. And one way I tell people
right.
to do that is take a notepad with you for the next week. And every time you do something that makes you feel strong, that energizes you, that you find yourself doing when nobody's watching, that you feel
yep.
great when you're doing it. But put all of those things in the strength column. When you're doing something that makes you, that drains you, that you procrastinate doing, that almost in some cases physically pains you to have to do that thing, or it just really zaps your energy, then that's not a strength for you. And I tell people, figure out what your strengths are, because if you play to your strengths, you'll be much more successful. And then working in a team, you need a team who has strengths that you don't have. If everybody, it's like, we can talk about the rowing a bit and some of the analogy of rowing, which I use all the time, because everybody in the boat has a different role and has a different strength. And if everybody on the team had the same exact skills, it wouldn't be as effective. You wouldn't get as far as fast. And so,
well, the boat goes nowhere.
The boat goes nowhere.
Having too many cooks in the kitchen.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, in a rowing boat, because, you know, you have the person who's considered, it's called the stroke position or the 8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that set the tone and the pace, and everyone sees them, right? And then the person that's, and they have one oar. So if for people who are on the call today, if you picture one of these long rowing boats, they're 60 feet long. They have 8 rowers and a role called a coxswain, and that's the person who steers the boat. And so the person who is rowing, who's the leader, is out in front. And actually, the people who follow them are looking at their back.
Yep.
And you have oars out to either side of the boat. So the 8 feet and the 7 feet, they're leading everything. Then you have the powerhouse in the middle. So those are the people who are big and strong. And no matter what happens, they're just going to keep the boat moving. Then at the very back of the boat, you have the balancing seat. And they see all the way down. They see the stuff that's going on.
Right.
You know, and so it's an interesting analogy. Because if you have everyone trying to do each other's roles, like if everyone tried to be the leader, the whole boat would fail. It wouldn't
yep.
go anywhere.
Yep.
If you had everyone trying to be in a powerhouse role, then the boat would rock all over the place and you wouldn't have any balance. So these things are so important.
Yeah.
Especially when we look at the future of work, right?
Right.
So anyhow, there's a woman named Tara Swart, and she's pretty famous. She lectures at Stanford and Oxford and all these places we all wish we went to, you know, college at. And she says there are 5 brain skills that we need to meet the future demands of work. You know, we all know that work is changing, you know, especially in the United States. It's changing drastically. And there was an article that came out not too long ago. Actually, it was the report, and I forgot the name of the company that does it, but it's a major company that puts a report out every year about, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And they've said that massive amounts of jobs will be cut because of IT, you know, and all the stuff that we've created.
Yeah.
On the other side of that coin, a lot of those people that have created all the IT, like even people like us, I work for Modern IT at Microsoft, people who've created new technology, they've said that some of us are under extreme stress today because we're starting to ask the question to ourselves, oh, my God, what did I create? You know, and now it's going to eliminate jobs.
Right.
So what are the skills we need for the future of work? All these skills are these soft skills that companies have cut budgets for ages. Right? What always gets cut? All the soft skill kind of stuff, but it's what we need for the emotion. So she actually says there are five things to meet the demands of the future of work. And the first one is to regulate our emotions. And
right.
we'll talk about that on the call today. How do we do that? The second one is to suppress our biases, you know, which we all have. We can lie and say, oh, I don't have any, but believe me, if you really look at yourself in the mirror, we all have them.
Exactly.
The next one is to switch between tasks. And, you know, a report came out a few years ago that says that we get interrupted every 11 minutes and that it takes 24 minutes to get back to where we started. And I would actually say today those statistics are not true. But what's happened and what's really sad is that we've become really good at interrupting each other and really good at being interrupted. And we've also become better at getting back to where we started.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad that we don't let each other finish our thoughts and the work that we do. So switching between tasks will be very important for the future because we interrupt each other constantly.
Right.
The next one is number four that Tara talked about is solving complex problems. And we all know that. Problems are getting bigger today. You know, companies are merging every day. We're merging technology every day, so different platforms have to work together. And so solving complex problems is an issue for the future. And it's going to take a lot of brain power. So I'm also going to talk a little bit today about how we can increase our brain power. Because when we don't finish things, they've proven this in brain studies, when we don't finish things that we start, things actually disconnect in our brain.
Right.
And it's all of our synapses that fire and all this stuff that goes on in our heads. When we don't finish stuff, we start to kill that. And over time, we lose our ability to make the connections that we need to make to solve complex problems.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Now, I'm not a scientist, but it's very interesting.
Yeah.
and the last one is to think creatively and to think flexibly, which is hard, right? It's hard to think out of the box sometimes, and it's hard to be flexible.
Yeah.
So these things that she says we need to have for the future of work are really interesting.
Well, what's interesting is I think those are great, and it really relates to all the work they're doing on neuro leadership and neuroscience and all that kind of stuff in terms of what's going on in the brain, and that we all do have biases. And if you're left-handed, you might be biased against people that are right-handed. If you're, you know, a fact person, you might be biased against someone who's a not factual person, more of an emotional person. But something you said, I do need to tackle a little bit. And I'm trying to think of the right word. I was going to say jump on. I hate it when people use the word soft skills. There is nothing soft about leadership, about teamwork. I call it professional skills. Because there's nothing soft about being a team leader, being part of a team, you know, whether you're in the boat or whatever you happen to do, there's nothing soft about it. It is professional skills or something. So I'm sorry.
I'm glad you said that because, well, here's why. And I'm passionate about this because I believe that greatness happens one conversation at a time. And I believe that greatness happens one interaction at a time and one decision at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing at all soft about the word greatness. So. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, it's interesting because with today's environment, now I was on the Singapore American Dragon Boat team, which is a little bit different than a traditional rowing team. So I was part of the Singapore Dragon team. And when I lived in Washington, I lived in what was called the East Side on one side of Lake Washington. And then on the other side of Lake Washington was Seattle and the University of Washington. And every day I would, you know, anytime I had to go in the city, I would be driving across this floating bridge, and yes, the bridges in Seattle actually float on the water. They're not in the sky. They float on the water. And I would watch these rowing teams, and it was so beautiful, the synchronization and the sound of the water that when I moved to Singapore for Microsoft when I was transferred over there, we lived along the Singapore River, and we saw these dragon boat. We saw a dragon boat race one day when we first moved there, and I said, I want to do that. I want to learn how to do that. I've always admired rowing. I've been to regattas and rowing race from the time I was a kid, mm-hmm. and I want to do that. And I did. And our women's rowing team, 8-woman rowing team, never lost a race. And, you know, it was such an interesting thing about the teamwork and the synergy and the things that sometimes you do. And I sometimes do in an exercise with organizations when we're talking about teamwork. And I tell mm-hmm. them all it's a nonverbal exercise, meaning nobody can talk. Each team gets a flip chart and colored pens, and I tell them to draw their organization as they see it today as a water-going vessel.
Yep.
And it has to include what are the people doing in the boat, the water-going vessel, what is the environment, what's in the water, what's in the sky. And these pictures are hysterical. You'll see.
I love that you're talking about this. Yeah, because, you know, we do that as part of our Rowers Code workshop.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting. Yeah, to get people to draw their world using boats. Right.
And you'll see a battleship with a tugboat that's detached. You'll see a
yep.
life raft with half of or a old traditional log boat with half of the logs falling off. You'll see sharks in the water. You'll see one person on the front of the boat and nobody else behind them. And what I tell people is that when you really get your team working together and synchronized like a rowing team, everyone's in the boat with the same size oars, facing the same direction, and all the leader needs to do, like the coxswain, is count the beats.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Hey, should we go over the 7 points of the Rower's Code, the 7 principles?
I think we should, but let's do it after break. Let's do it after break. So we're going to take a quick commercial break in just a second. But before we go, just one quick question. What are some of the skills you think we need to work in today's challenging work environment? I think you listed the 5 here. How would you summarize those 5?
Well, I think the number one thing that people need to do today to be successful in the future is to be mindful. And I think when we come back after the break, we could talk about mindfulness and how it relates to the future of work.
Yep.
And there's a really great YouTube video called Why Mindfulness is a Superpower. And I also believe that mindfulness is a superpower. So let's talk about that when we come back.
Sounds perfect. Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge, with the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days, all with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Patty and her guest.
Well, I'm having a great conversation with Marilyn, who wrote the book, The Rower's Code. We're having a great conversation about future of work and teamwork and rowing and all kinds of things and mindfulness. So let's start off with what are the 7 principles that are in The Rower's Code. Let's talk with that. And then we'll relate it to mindfulness because I really want to go into that topic as well. But let's start with the seven principles of the Rower's Code.
So the first principle is always do what's best for the team. So, of course, that involves knowing what's best for your team, right? And then committing to your team to do what's best for the team versus doing what's best for you. The second one is every seat has equal value. So that's about tapping into the strengths of your peers and valuing other people based on, and here's a concept for you, leadership as an activity versus leadership as a role. So it's not looking at people's titles at work, but it's actually looking at what do they bring to the team? What strengths do my peers bring to the team? The third one is carry your load. So that's about being responsible. And I want to bring up something, actually, Patty, about responsibility, because I teach this thing called the three lies. And here are the three lies. And this is for one side of the spectrum of responsibility, because there are two sides, right, to every coin. So this is on one side. Someone else will do it. If I do something, it won't matter. And if I ignore it, it'll go away. And we have all told ourselves that at different times in our lives, right? Or at least we hope. We hope if we ignore things, they'll go away, but they never do.
They never do.
They never do. The other side of the coin for the overachievers of the world is I have to do everything. Without me, we will fail. It's urgent. It has to happen right now. So that's your quadruple A personality, people, and you know who you are. When I just told you those three lies, I'm sure you thought, oh, my God, that's me. I overwork. I over everything.
Right.
So the fourth point in the rower's code is balance the boat.
Yep.
And that's about attaining the right mix of a lot of things. And we'll talk about some of these balances with mindfulness and how they can help us in life. But balance the boat's the one that we're going to focus on for today. The other ones are number five is stay in sync. And that's realizing what you do and don't do affects others and being in sync with them. Because when it comes to mindfulness, you know, you don't want to be the guru at the top of the mountain, right? And someone runs up to you and says, guru, you know, I have cancer and I'm dying and I need your help. And the guru says, just breathe. You don't want to be like that, right? We need to be in sync with each other. And that's putting on our ears to hear, right? And responding, not reacting to people, all that good stuff. The next one is lead by example. And that's leadership as an activity, right? Not as a role.
Right.
And then the last one is keep everything in the boat. And some of you are going to say, oh, with everything that's going on right now about women speaking out and blah, 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 do you mean that? I don't mean that at all. Keep everything in the boat means in your boat of people that you are working with, work it out. Keep your issues in your boat to work out. And if you need help, bring someone in.
Yeah.
If people go outside of the boat one person at a time, their relationship to the person they go out and speak to is outside of the boat, so the other people can't benefit from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're going to talk, bring someone like Patty or me or someone in to help you. You know, it could be a brief thing. It could be an hour. It could be a cup of coffee. It could be anything with your team. Bring someone in, sort it out, and move on.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to do it right away, because when you let things fester, people start to go outside of the boat, and then what happens? Your emotions rule the day.
Yeah.
And that brings us back to balance, right?
Right. And you end up becoming a dysfunctional team, or what sometimes I'll even call a hall talk, is that you're all in a team meeting and you agree on a decision. And then several people walk out of the meeting and say, well, man, that was the dumbest decision I ever heard. And they didn't bring it up at the time when somebody could do something about it, or we could come up with a better solution. And now the team has just started to deteriorate. It's that gossip. It's that hall talk. It's that taking things outside the boat before you try and deal with them inside. And like you said, if you need help, call someone. I'm doing a follow-up team building session for a client here for a university. We did a first one that they really enjoyed. And so we're going to be talking about teamwork and collaboration and keeping things in the boat and all those kinds of things. So I think that's really important. And I think mindfulness really plays a part here. So I wanted to have you talk a little bit about mindfulness and what that means for folks. It's not some airy-fairy word, because a lot of times new words or terms come out and people say, oh, it's that touchy-feely, airy-fairy stuff, that soft skills. Mindfulness is really hard. So talk about mindfulness and what that means to you and how that relates to work and overall.
I will. So I'll tell you a little story about it, too. So I got my tennis scholarship. I played tennis in college. I played a little bit after college. And then I became an executive in the paper industry, right? So I was on an airplane, and I found this book, I think at an airport, and it was by John Kabat-Zinn. I probably don't say his name right. But it was a book titled something like Wherever You Go, There You Are. And I picked it up, and that was my first – have you read that book?
No, but I love that title.
I know. Wherever you go, there you are. And I thought, yeah, I sure am, you know. So anyhow, I read that book, and I was writing all over the inside of the book. So I was relating to everything in it. You know, at that point in my life, I was like, they're writing this for me, to me. You know, he's my new best friend. And so anyhow, in that book, they introduce mindfulness and meditation and some of these concepts. But what mindfulness means for me after all these years, right? So 30 years passed since I got, not 30, but a lot of years have passed since I got that book. And what mindfulness is to me is not letting emotions rule my day, my emotions. Because as a consultant, I get a lot of phone calls from upset people. Mm-hmm. You know, people call me because they need help. People in teams need help. They're either in trouble at work, or they're about to be in trouble at work, or their team is collapsing. People all hardly ever call me anymore because their team is so awesome that they want me to come and speak to them.
Right.
That's not why they call me. People call me because things aren't going as they want them to go. You know, it's just not as great, or they're not having fun. You know, where they have too many emotional people. So I do a lot of interventions. And guess what? My interventions are fun because we move forward.
Yeah.
You know, my whole thing that I do with people is I help them move forward. So mindfulness for me is not letting our emotions roll our day. And that goes back to the third point of the rower's code about balance the boat.
Right.
So if you picture yourself in your own boat, we often look at how we feel first. Because, right, we feel it. So something happens to us, right? Someone says something to us. We go back into our own space or our own head, and we're angry, right? And we can decide what we do with those emotions. We can either react, you know, quickly. They say something we don't like, and you say, I disagree with you, right? Or you take some kind of stance.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other spaces in our lives. So just like in a boat, there's not just the oar. There's the seat that moves. There's our teammates. There's the actual boat that moves through the water. Well, we have three spaces, I think, in our lives, and this is all related to mindfulness. So the first one is our feel space, so how we feel, which we need to acknowledge because our feelings are real. The second space, and what mindfulness gets me to do, is it gets me to get from the feeling space to the next space, which is your seeing space. What do you see in your head? What's your vision for the future?
Mm-hmm.
And having a clear vision for the future is really important. So if someone tells you something you don't like, you get these feelings, but then if you're very good at being mindful of saying, that is a feeling, it's not necessarily real, what do I see in my head, you know, for the future? So you go into the feeling space of your vision and stop, and you sit and look at how do I envision the future? Then you can get to your next space, which is your thinking space, right? And that's where you can create a plan. So for me, mindfulness has a couple components to it. First, it has, you know, the component of calming yourself, right, and stopping. So really stopping and then calming yourself so you can actually see and think versus just feel. The second thing is it helps you stay in the present moment. You know, this is a moment right now. It's not something from yesterday. It's not something in the future. Someone just said something to me. Right now, this is how I feel. Right now, this is what I see. And right now, this is what I think. So to me, it's not just being in the present moment, but realizing there is a moment in time that is happening right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next thing is it helps you understand what's going on within yourself, right? That I'm angry, but also being able to make clear fact-based decisions, right? Because you can focus on what you can control, not what you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can't control your feelings, but you can control your vision for the future.
Right.
And you can control your thoughts. So it helps you understand that there's more than just my feelings involved in this whole thing. The next piece that mindfulness helps me with is when I'm able to balance my own boat and have a feeling, a seeing, and a thinking space active, right? Because sometimes we kill some of them. Our feelings get so strong that we've like taken a knife and stabbed our seeing and our thinking space and we've annihilated them.
Right.
So if you could stop for a minute and be mindful that I'm upset, that there are other pieces to me. Like I'm a visionary person. I can envision the future and I can put together a plan. I can think through that. So if you stop and take those steps, then you get to a really key part of mindfulness, which is imagining a life that's positive. So that's one step first, imagine it. So take your vision for the future and imagine things being positive, mm-hmm. and then setting into motion some positive activities or actions.
Yeah.
So your next three steps. For me, it's always my next three steps. What are the next three things I'm going to do?
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the next three steps is never to run into the other person's office and say, I think you're absolutely wrong, and show them all your emotions. And this is where mindfulness, I think, helps women a lot.
Yeah.
If we can stop ourselves and think through things, we will learn to respond versus react.
Well,
the last thing is that's really important about mindfulness is it helps me especially understand that all things pass. You're not going to be in that moment where they made you upset forever. A time will come when you're not so upset. And guess what? That's probably the time when the great conversation can happen.
Well,
versus the conversation that's breaking. Right?
Yeah, it's interesting because of just a couple of things to highlight there is that, you know, for people of the audience, if you've ever been in a situation where somebody has said something or done something, your first thought is a reaction, whether you're angry, upset, whether it's peak performance, or whether you're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Your first response is always how you felt about it. And when you talk about the word react, so I have this a number of very strange habits, but one of my strange habits happens to be that I like to look up what words mean, you know, and where they came from. And I even go back and look at the word like manage comes from the word hands, which managers are more hands-on. Lead comes from the Latin word led, which means determine the course of a ship. So managers are hands-on. Leaders are more visionary, determining the course of the ship and allowing other people to sail it. So when I look up the word react, and you really look up what the word react means, it means to cause an action without thinking and from a human perspective. So when you react to something that somebody says, you are engaging your mouth without your head. And how often does that turn out right?
And that's great.
And one of the criticisms many times of women from men is they're too emotional. They react too quickly. They're sitting in a team meeting, and even if they like the idea, they're the first one to say, hey, that's a great idea. But they haven't really thought through it yet. Or they're the first one to say, oh, that idea will never work. So if women could learn to think first, maybe let a few other people talk first in a meeting, especially if you're an extrovert like me, let some other people respond first and then add value to what they've said and just maybe say it with less words. So
I think that's excellent advice, and it connects those three spaces, right? Our feel space, because you can turn your anger. So everyone think about this. You can turn anger into passion.
Yeah.
Right? How can you turn anger into passion? And how can you turn a disagreement into passion? You could do it by painting a really clear vision for the future. And then that's your seeing space. And then using your thinking space to come up with three next steps that everyone agrees on. That everyone can't really argue with.
And
so then you can take anger and all the negativity and turn it into a positive thing.
Yeah. And you literally start your statement by saying, I think, not I feel. So you start with that more powerful statement. So what if you're the only mindful person in the room? You're the only mindful person in the boat, and the rest is all power position people, or there's nobody balancing the boat. And what if you're the only mindful person on your team or in that boat? What do you do?
Yeah, I think if you're the only person, one thing is to realize that, right? So be mindful, be self-aware, to realize, you know, oh my gosh, this is the way it is, and then be mindful and stop. Don't react by saying, I'm the only one who's mindful in here, you know, or getting upset about it. Instead,
you're all crazy.
Yeah. Because you know what that does? Here's what that does. It pulls everything apart. So if you're the only person being mindful and there's, you know, chaos all around you, then it's not so great to point that out and to say you're not being mindful to other people. Because it's attacking and it's breaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently did a really fun thing with one of my customers. I was with, I do some work for Campari, the Italian alcohol company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they own all kinds of brands today. So they own like Sky Vodka, Grand Marnier, all these other brands, which are huge brands. And so every year I do their leadership meeting. And this year I talked to them about being mindful in the workplace and how mindfulness is a superpower. And I gave them puzzles. So you could buy these little puzzles on Amazon that are tiny, you know, and I gave everyone a puzzle. And I was trying to teach them a lesson, and here's the lesson. It's easier to pull something apart than it is to put it back together. So I gave them little puzzles they had to take apart, and most people could take their puzzle apart, but it was really hard for people to put them back together. And so if you're the only mindful person in a room, the first thing is to continue to be mindful and realize that other people aren't with you. Mm-hmm. And if you analyze that a little bit, you can start to see that, and these are facts, not just your feelings, but that maybe they're all in their feeling space. Maybe they're just all feeling frustrated or feeling angry or feeling something that's negative, right? And
right.
And you already felt some feeling, so you felt that. You're in a different space. You're in your thinking space or your visionary space. So I think a really important thing to do is to try to get everyone to stop for a minute and ask the right questions. So ask everyone else, how do you feel right now? Why do you feel that way? Why do you feel so strongly about that? If someone feels really strongly, ask them the question, why do you feel so strongly? And then listen. Listen without judging. Because mm-hmm. I feel that 9 times out of 10, people want to be heard. And they feel like they're not being heard at work. I'm using feel as a different kind of word right now, right?
Right.
But people don't feel like other people are listening. And if you just stop and listen to someone without being judgmental, without reacting or even responding, just listening, it goes a long way. And then things start to calm down.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is really key to being successful, especially if you are the only mindful person, is learn how to develop your own relaxation response. And there's a big reason for that. It's not just so you can relax and then you feel great, right? Because you feel all relaxed while chaos is happening around you. It's not for that reason at all. It's because then as a woman, you can come from a position of strength.
Yeah.
And then you can respond versus react.
Yeah.
So if you can develop a response where you tell yourself, okay, I'm mostly feeling something right now. And then you realize you don't have to do anything with those feelings except keep them to yourself. And then you start to realize that, okay, now I can start to see something, you know, a way out of this or a vision for the future. Then you can also start to think. It causes you to calm down, mm-hmm. and then you'll organize your thoughts better.
Yeah.
Versus just blurting out the next thing that's in your head.
Yeah, like maybe teach yourself to do the old count to 10 before you react or respond. And,
yeah, exactly.
And I also found that I've told people that one of the differences between managers and leaders is managers tend to tell people what to do. And leaders, meaning mm-hmm. not the role leader, anyone can be a leader in the boat. It doesn't have to be the particular
right,
person.
Right, the activity. Yep.
The activity that they're doing is that leaders ask questions that lead people to self-discovery. So if your team is going off base, rather than saying, hey, you're all crazy, get back in the boat, maybe ask some questions about, well, have you thought about this? Or, you know, tell me, like you said, what's going on? Tell me why you're feeling this way or why you think this is the best thing to do. But really using the power of asking questions to get people to discover for themselves and almost talk themselves out of the idea of what they're thinking about.
I actually have on my LinkedIn, if any of you go to it afterwards, on my LinkedIn, I have an article that I wrote that's called Leaders Ask the Right Questions.
Yep.
And it's just a really short little thing, but I think asking the right questions is really important. And then there's one question you should always ask yourself. And to me, this is kind of my little superpower thing that has helped me in life. And in every situation you're in, ask yourself, what am I bringing to the room right now?
Hmm. Yeah.
Check yourself that way. So I have it written. I have it. Actually, I'm looking up at my wall in my office, and I have it written right on my wall. What do I bring to the room?
Yep.
And what I've noticed is that when I ask people that, we tend to default to, well, I have this strength. So I want to question everybody, and I want to challenge you. When you're in a bad situation, right, where nothing feels good, no one is with you, you are alone, are you bringing that strength then?
Yeah.
And, you know, and people, we've all done like strength finders and all these different things about what are our strengths. But in that moment, are we using that strength? Probably not. And you might not even be able to because no one's acknowledging it.
Yeah.
So if no one's acknowledging a strength you have and you're not able to bring it into a room, what are you bringing?
Yeah.
And this is why I think what you just said, Patty, is so key. If we ask the right questions, we're then opening up the forum for people to start to be visionary and start to think things through versus everyone operating with their feelings, trying to get the next word in.
Yep.
Right. To be heard.
So you,
versus we all start listening to each other.
So you mentioned a YouTube video. I want to reference one as well, but I want to make sure that people know how they could find the mindfulness video that you were talking about. But there is one from Mindfulness 2.0. It's a YouTube video you can find. It's a conversation with Pete Carroll. I happen to be from Seattle, so obviously I'm a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. Pete Carroll is the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, and what he and the quarterback Russell Wilson have done to change the dynamics of the team is amazing. But they've actually transformed the city. The city of Seattle is different today than it was before Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson started playing there. The culture is different. The people are different. How they think. And this video is Pete Carroll talking about mindfulness and being a mindful leader. It's Pete Carroll. A YouTube video on Mindfulness 2.0 conference. And so I want to make sure we circle back to the video that you mentioned, and then I want to talk about how do you create this mindfulness in this crazy world with multi-generations and the whole, you know, faster things. Everything's got to be on Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. But first, what was the video that you referenced was why mindfulness?
Yeah, so it's a Happify video on YouTube. And it's called Why Mindfulness is a Superpower.
It's a superpower.
It's a really cute little video. I play it with teams all the time because, you know, sometimes when you first introduce mindfulness to a group, they think it's this hippie thing and this thing that's out there.
Yeah, this very fairy thing.
It's not a hippie thing. Yeah. It's a soft skill, right, where you're going to go and meditate. The reason, though, let's talk about meditation for just a minute. The reason why I think meditation is really important is, again, it gets us to stop and it gets us to balance the three parts that we have inside of us, our feel space, our see space, and our think space. You know, because I don't know for how many of you, you know, I don't know how many people on this call today meditate, but I remember the first time I tried to meditate, after about 10 seconds, I was dying.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing here?
Meditation challenge.
In my head. Yeah, it was a real challenge. I wasn't sure what I saw. You know, it's kind of funny because some people see at the front of their heads, some people see at the back of their heads, and some people think or see things from their belly, you know, kind of like your chest and your belly.
Right.
I didn't even know that. So someone told me that, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, and it was all scary for me. I was like, am I going to end up being a hippie? You know, like we're sitting here, we're being quiet, are we going to have this, you know, esoteric thing happen? Yeah, what's going to happen to me? And, I meditate now quite often, usually for 30 minutes at a time. And what I do when I meditate is I think about, are my shoulders tight? Is my neck tight? How does my body feel right now? Mm-hmm. And I kind of sort that out and get myself to relax a little bit. And then I try to move into my seeing space. What do I really envision, you know, right now?
Yeah.
What's in my head about this? And then, you know, in my vision space in my head. And then thinking about what can I do next? And it really helps me stop and think through things. So I come up with a great next three steps versus three steps that aren't going to go anywhere.
That's great. That's great advice. I can't believe the time is actually running out right now. But I want to do two things. I want to hear from you. What advice do you have for women leaders to be more mindful or to really go kick some glass? And the last thing I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you. So if you could give us your word of advice to help women be more mindful. I love the three steps, have the three steps, but what other advice you might have. And then how do we get in touch with you? And please spell your last name because it's a little harder to spell.
Okay, great. So think about what you want to bring to the room. So what I would do is, you know, first of all, decide what are you really passionate about and what do you want to accomplish? What does your window of opportunity look like? You know, go back to those five things. Who's in my network? You know, that's related to the importance of teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of plan should I have around that? You need a plan. If you don't take time to plan, you know, so if you don't stop and think through things, have a vision, think through the whole thing, when your window of opportunity is presented to you, you're not prepared for it.
Yeah.
So as women, I would prepare for that opportunity. And there's one other piece that we haven't talked about today, and that is plant seeds. sometimes as women, we seem to think that we have to tell the whole story when we meet with someone. And I actually think we can beat people to death with words, you know, because we go on and on and on, and they're not quite with us. So I think being a real, I'll change it from Johnny to Jonah Appleseed.
Plant seeds.
we'll give it a woman's name. Yeah, plant seeds.
Yeah.
You don't have to exhaust your whole idea with someone. Plant a few seeds and then meet again.
Yep.
And make that part of your plan. So to me, those are really key things. And then every time you meet with someone, think, what do I want to bring to this conversation? Or what do I want to bring to the room now?
Yep.
What's important for now?
Great.
Is it my plan? Is it my vision? Is it some of my positive emotions, like my passion? What will move the boat forward? What can I bring now?
And
that's my advice.
Great. And planting some seeds.
Contact information.
Yeah, contact information. How do we find you, Marilyn?
Yeah, my name is spelled Marilyn. Marilyn, like Marilyn Monroe, but we don't look the same. My last name is spelled Krichko, KRICHKO. And you could find me at Marilyn@rowerscode.com or info@rowerscode.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn, so feel free to link with me. Just send me a connect and say, you know, I heard you on Patty's show. And or contact Patty, because I think Patty and I are going to be in touch for the rest of our lives here on this earth. So.
Yeah.
Just contact Patty.
This has been a great show. I feel like I've met my twin sister from the Appalachians out back here.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so Patty, I'm so happy to be on your show today.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
Thanks for being a great guest, and we'll touch base later. Have a great day, and everyone, let's go kick some glass.
Kick some glass. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grim.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrim@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.